from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum, as cold weather settles into the Bay Area, Forum opens our phone lines for our biannual book show when listeners share their favorite reads. We invite you to pull up a chair, pour a mug of tea, and tell us about your favorite books. What is the latest great book you've read? We want to hear your recommendations. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In this hour, we're going to do our biannual listener reading picks, and we invite you to let us know, well, what you'd like to recommend for a must read. Have you read any wonderful books lately that you want our listening public to know about? We're going to talk this hour all about books, and you can join us. Our toll-free number is available. In fact, you can join us now. It's 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. We'll list your recommendations on our website and really have it accessible by the end of the day, we hope. And first, we're going to go to New York and welcome Pamela Paul, who's the editor of the New York Times Book Review and host of the New York Times Book Review podcast, and author most recently of By the Book, Writers on Literature and the Literary Life, which is now out in paperback. Pamela Paul, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, you're doing these podcasts now and editing and always reading. We should probably have you on for an hour about how to do life-work balance. But I'm going to begin instead by kind of turning the tables on you, because in the weekly By the Book feature that you do, you ask authors often, what's the last wonderful book that you've read, or what's on your nightstand, and so forth. I know there are probably a lot of books on your nightstand, but can you tell us maybe a truly great book that you've read recently?
Well, I'm gonna dodge your question just a little bit, because we at the New York Times Book Review are in the process of finalizing our 100 notable books of the year and then our 10 best, which will both of those will be out in the next week or so. So I don't want to give anything away. So I don't want to say the newest things that are on my nightstand. I will reveal one book, and then I'll talk about an old book that I'm reading for the first time. So one of the novels that I'm reading right now is a posthumous work by a Hungarian author. The novel is called The Door by Magda Szabo, and that was reviewed in the New York Times earlier this year by Claire Massoud. It's a really interesting book in translation. It was written in or published in 1987, but just out here in English, and it's about the complex relationship between a Hungarian woman, a writer, and her housekeeper. And it's totally engrossing, thoroughly modern, completely universal. So just because it's by a dead Hungarian author and it's in translation, I hope that won't dissuade readers. And the other book that I'm reading is an old book, and I think that I'm probably the last person to turn to him, but I've recently been reading David Foster Wallace, having seen The End of the Tour, the movie that came out, I think, earlier this year. And his essays are just unbelievable. The Consider the Lobster and A Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again. It's kind of, it feels a little bit, well, totally cliched. It's like, you know, calling out Tolstoy as a great writer. Not that they're totally comparable, but everyone, I think, or many people have already discovered him, and I'm coming to him very late.
We had Jesse Eisenberg on recently, who has a volume of stories out, kind of anecdotal stories, and we also had D.H. Max, who has written a great deal about David Foster Wallace. And in fact, I interviewed David Foster Wallace when he put out a book of short stories, and that's a kind of hidden little gem in itself, that collection. You mentioned the essays, and of course, he's known mainly for his novels, but also a short story writer.
Yeah, actually, I just saw Jesse Eisenberg. He was down in Miami for the book fair this past weekend, which is one of the great joys of the literary world.
I'm going to give out the phone number, by the way, because I want listeners to start the things rolling here and have some recommendations. We can get Pamela to comment on them. And in some instances, I'll take that liberty, too. But we do want to start hearing your recommendations, and particularly a book that you have read that has had a good deal of impact on you, or that you find compelling, that you really want to sort of share the wealth to our listeners. As I said, this will be posted on our website and it'll be available to you later in the day. And these lists are always very popular. So feel free to join us. By the way, it can be fiction or nonfiction, and it can be recent, or it can be, you know, a posthumous Hungarian writer or whatever, somebody who's simply not around, a classic. We just like to hear what you're reading, what you like to read, and what you'd like other people to know about to read. Again, toll free 866-733-6786. And you can make your call now and let us know what that book is. And also email us forum@kqed.org. Just a quick question. When you were talking, Pamela, about having a reviewer do the Hungarian novel that you have cited, I'm just wondering about the decision in terms of who reviews what books. I know that may be asking a little bit about a trade secret, but you never really know, do you, in terms of, I know you try to keep it as free and as pure as possible, but you could be getting or enlisting someone who seems like a good fit, and they could be a bête noire, the person they're reviewing, couldn't they?
Well, you know, it's a very complicated process, I don't want to reveal too much of the special sauce, but a lot of it is, well, first of all, you know, there are two major decisions at the book review. One is deciding which books to review. We review about 1% of the books published in any given year. So those decisions are not taken lightly. And then it is finding a reviewer who we think will appreciate the work in question, whether it's a novel or a work of poetry or nonfiction. And to find someone who does not have a conflict of interest, which is the journalistically responsible thing to do. We are part of a newspaper at the New York Times, and while all reviewing is subjective, we try to find someone who doesn't have an agenda. One of the things, you know, that people think when we get a negative review in is that, you know, perhaps it was a setup, perhaps we picked someone, we wanted, you know, John Grisham or some beloved author to be taken down, and that really is never the case. When we pick a book for review, it's because we find something in there worthwhile and of interest to our readers, and, you know, reviewers take their job in turn very seriously, one hopes, and they're not guaranteed to like it, and they're not beholden to like it, and we're not... We don't change their opinion in the editing process. So sometimes you'll find a book that will get a very negative review in the Times Book Review, and it breaks our hearts a little bit because it may have been an in-house favorite. What we do is the week after our review runs, we have a little section in the book review called Editor's Choice. And if you watch it carefully, you will note that sometimes we name a book in there that got a very bad review or negative review in the Times the week before, but we liked it and we wanted to call it out.
I was looking at, we'll go to our callers here in just a moment, but I was looking at the November 29th issue of the New York Times Book Review, and there's a whole section on Primo Levi. There's a review of a biography of Gore Vidal. There's something about Ian Fleming and John Lennon and Carrie Bronstein, who recently was on this program, her new book, but also stuff about ancient Rome and Augustine and atheism in the ancient world, as well as an Umberto Eco novel. And I thought, boy, this is about as eclectic as it gets. And then I was looking at your podcasts, and the November 1st podcast was devoted to Michael Connelly's novel and a biographer of Jean Le Carré and a memoir by Frederick Forsyth, which seemed to be much more kind of connected in a way. All bestsellers, all sort of mystery writers or suspense writers, spy writers, whatever. How does that work in terms of what you do on the podcast as opposed to what you do in the newspaper?
You know, it's hard to narrow it down for the podcast because I do only talk to two or three authors each week. And I have to say, I generally try to talk to writers whose books interest me. So there is a little bit of a personal sort of tinge to that podcast. There are conversations that I'm having with writers, and I do think that, as I'm sure you know, as a radio host, that these kind of interviews and conversations are much more fun to listen to when there is a genuine interest on, you know, with both parties. So the person who I'm interviewing is obviously interested in their own work, but it helps if I'm interested too. That said, you know, I do try to cover that wide territory. As you said, the book review, really, we try not to review just one kind of book. We're trying to be broad in our coverage, to write about fantasy novels, to write about, 19th century letters from authors, to write about science and history and poetry. And there's just a lot of ground to cover, not to mention children's books and crime novels. So I do try to have some of that breadth in the podcast. The week that you called out, it just so happened that Michael Connelly was available, and those two spy novel biographies had come out. And as I said, I'm really interested in that. I am a fan of Le Carré, and wanted to talk to the reviewer of those two books.
Well, you do cover a lot of ground, and last time you were on with us, you said you were committed to covering a lot of ground, including the West Coast, and not necessarily ignoring us out here, and covering global writers. I mean, a Hungarian writer, what could be more appropriate along those lines? You're still committed.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about a few of the novels that have come out in translation this year that I think are really standouts. I mentioned Magda Szabo's The Door. Clarice Lispector, one of the great Brazilian writers, her complete stories were translated and published this year. Beauty is a Wound by Ika Kurniawan, an Indonesian writer, major contemporary Indonesian writer, was published here. It got a lot of attention, which is exciting. Chigozie Obiama, an African author, his debut novel was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. The Murso Investigation, another one, Kamel Douad. He is an Algerian writer, and he kind of riffs off of Camus' famous novel, The Stranger, and that book was on our cover, another book in translation.
In fact, that is from the standpoint of the Algerian that Murso killed, yeah?
The Nameless Algerian gets a name in that novel. So we are committed to covering books from around the world and to having writers, Karl Ove Knausgård, for example, the writer of author of My Struggle. His book 4 in that 6-part series came out this year. And then he, in turn, reviewed on our cover Michel Houellebecq's new novel, Submission, which was also translated this fall into English.
Well, you are covering a lot of ground, and we hope we can with our listeners, too. I suspect, in fact, that we'll get all kinds of calls here about books in a global sense as well as in the local, and fiction, nonfiction. Let's go to our first caller. It's Barnaby. Good morning.
Yeah. So my book is American Gods by Neil Gaiman. Came out 5-10 years ago, and it's a great book that spans weird concepts of religion in America, road trips, and family. And the second one would be Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Those are two of my favorite authors and books.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate hearing from you, Barnaby. Actually, I've never read Gaiman, but I'm told, Pamela, have you? I'm told I should read Gaiman.
I have read Gaiman, and, you know, he is so prolific. He's easy to read because he writes so much, and he writes across so many genres. And he did an excellent review of Kazuo Ishiguro's most recent novel for us, and this year he has some great children's books out as well. And he did last year an amazing retelling of, what was it, Sleeping Beauty, and he has another retelling this year. So he's just so prolific and multi-talented. He goes, you know, between genres, he mixes genres.
I'll have to get to him. And by the way, the interview we did with Ishiguro is in our archives. I'll just mention that for those who are interested and didn't perhaps have the opportunity to hear it. And I'll get to another caller. Helena, morning. You're on.
Yes. Yes, I would like to recommend a book by Timothy Snyder called Holocaust and Implications or Warnings for Today. He's a historian from Yale, and I'm actually reading the book in Polish because I met the author in Poland recently, and it's an unbelievable book.
Thank you for that.
Very relevant.
The title, though, I think of the book you're talking about is Black Earth, isn't it?
Black Earth.
Yeah. Okay. And I appreciate your call, Helena. Here's another caller, Peter, recommending a book that we featured here on Forum, Sherry Turkle's book. Peter, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, it's Peter Warfield. Sherry Turkle's book, Reclaiming Conversation, The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. You got me to go to the library and get it. It's a wonderful book. It's basically talking about the decreasing empathy that people have for each other and the ways in which really technology is kind of breaking what she calls the virtuous circle of an individual being alone and thinking, people being one-on-one and people being in society or in politics.
Sherry Turkle is so smart, and I think her work is really important because she's taking a lot of what we kind of think is true and really grounding it in research and writing about it really cogently.
And it got a good review in the New York Times October 4th, I believe.
It did, yes. Jonathan Franzen reviewed it for us. That was on our cover.
And thank you, Peter. I'm looking at some website comments now. Beth says, as a major bibliophile who doesn't own a TV but does have a serious book budget, I love Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Black Man in White Coat, A Doctor's Reflections on Race and Medicine by Damon Tweedy, and Neurotribes, A Legacy of Autism and the Future of Neurodiversity by Steve Silberman, and she says, I'm autistic, which we featured. And you did, too, on one of your podcasts, didn't you?
Yes. Steve Silberman is great, and that book has been doing really well. It's really good to see. You know, there are certain books that they have an important message. I think Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, Between the World and Me, which she mentioned as well, another book that I think has an important, timely message that is great that it's getting out there and really reaching people.
We read a few emails. We're talking to Pamela Paul, by the way, of the New York Times. And here's Wu Lee, who says, right now I'm reading my second Ursula Le Guin novel, The Wizard of Earthsea, a fantastic early fantasy novel. Her writing is sharp and rich, and I'm loving every page. And by the way, Left Hand of Darkness may be one of the best science fiction novels of all by Ursula Le Guin. And I think, I don't know if I'm put you on the spot here a little bit, maybe, Pamela, but you know, you can't read Ursula Le Guin and read J.K. Rowling and wonder if there's, shall we say, a very strong influence there.
You know, I think that there is an increasing respect for fantasy as a genre. One of the reasons I think that children's books, especially young adult books, have become very popular with adults is because they often go sort of whole hog into the fantasy world or mix fantasy into a more realistic setting. And a lot of adults who might not pick up a fantasy novel for grown-ups are curiously more likely to pick up one in YA and find that they enjoy the genre. And N.K. Jemisin, who reviews science fiction and genre, had a book this year, The Fifth Season, first in a series that I think also is worthy of notice. Naomi Novik, another fantasy novelist, had a book this year that has gotten very, very strong reviews, including in our pages.
I'm going to read a few more of our listeners' suggestions. Eric says, Black Flags, The Rise of ISIS by Joby Warwick, a good introduction to the man who is one of the godfathers of ISIS and reads like a Robert Ludlum novel, but is all true. Erica says, Richard Dawkins, The Selfish Gene. I was inspired to finally read it after hearing him on Forum earlier this year and so glad I picked it up. He's so eloquent and accessible, explains incredibly complex evolutionary genetics, something every human being could or should be interested in learning about. And Doug says, I'm reading Horns by Joe Hill. Although the novel came out in 2010, I just picked it up and I'm enjoying it better than any fiction I've read in a while. Next on my list, City on Fire by Garth Risk-Hallberg. The novel got a lot of press due to the exorbitant advance the debut author received, $2 million, but it looks to be a good read. And we'll find out more of your good reads here. We'll go to Jesse. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
There are two very, very good graphic novels I would like to recommend. One is called Logic Comics, all one word, and spelled with an X at the end. And it's about Bertrand Russell and his whole relationship with mathematics and philosophy and what was going on around that time. It's a great read. And then the other one, which is screamingly funny and also a great read, is The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage, and it's about Ada King, the Countess of Lovelace, who was Lord Byron's daughter, and apparently back in the 1830s, she was one of the original people responsible for coming up with computer code.
She was a genius mathematician, yeah.
Yeah, and she was working with a guy named Charles Babbage, who was working on the actual machinery for the thing. They hit it off like mad, and she died really young. And he never got the main part of his machine made, so the author, Sidney Padua, decides, you know, I don't like that. I'm going to create an alternate universe where they get to keep living. And she, it's really good, and it's very intelligently written. And it's the fun she makes of Boole's mathematics.
Well, you can read about the book about Hedy Lamarr too, Jesse, which also it mentions Byron's daughter on a number of occasions because they were both really geniuses who were not known for their mathematic genius. Byron's daughter is mainly known as being Byron's daughter, and Hedy Lamarr, of course, is a movie actress. And thank you so much, Jesse, for that call. Pamela Paul, getting requests for recommendations from you on nonfiction?
And I just want to thank her for mentioning graphic novels and graphic nonfiction, which I think has become such a strong genre. We devoted almost an entire issue to it in October. And it's interesting that she called out two books that are, you know, biography nonfiction. There was Thunder and Lightning by Lauren Redness also this fall. Just a lot of really great graphic novels. And then I want to talk about some non-graphic novel science books, which I think there were a number of very strong ones this year. There was a biography of Jonas Salk by Charlotte DeCroze Jacobs.
We had her on, in fact.
Ah, okay. So you know all about that. The Invention of Nature, Alexander von Humboldt's New World by Andrea Wolf. H is for Hawk, which is kind of a blend of memoir, but also about falconry. The woman who wrote it, her father dies, and to get over her grief, she decides to train a goshawk. And I thought that was a really amazing, fascinating book. You mentioned earlier.
I agree with you. We featured that as well. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, we're on the. There are a lot of really great books. There was another one, The Weather Experiment, The Pioneers Who Sought to See the Future, which, you know, it sounds like it's boring, meteorology, but it's actually quite fascinating how people came to understand the weather. And that book is by Peter Moore, which came out in the spring.
I'm looking at Daniel on our website saying, I'm finding Stacy Schiff's The Witch is truly engrossing. I'm almost finished with it. I'm finding myself reading more slowly now to draw it out as much as possible. Let me bring another caller in here, and that's Amanda. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'd like to recommend two novels by Ben Lerner, who is trained as a poet, but he's done these two sort of fictionalized memoir genre blurring novels. The first is Leaving the Atocha Station, and the second is 1004. And they're not exactly sequential, but they're definitely complementary, and they're just wonderful, sort of essayistic and poetic and great books.
Okay. I thank you for those recommendations. And let's get a local author on here who we featured. George is going to recommend David Talbot's new book. You loved it?
Right. It's a wonderful book. It's really the expose about power and the Dulles brothers, and he has tremendous insight into the political scene, Richard Nixon's growth, how he came there, the McCarthy era, and the secret, actually it's the rise of the national security state, which also was very interesting.
Yeah, so it's a very disturbing book in many ways because it presents Alan Dulles as perhaps he really was. Pamela Paul's the editor of the New York Times Book Review, editor as well as author of By the Book, Writers on Literature and the Literary Life. How can people get your podcast, which I enjoyed?
Well, you can go on to the New York Times website at newyorktimes.com/books, and our podcast is right at the top, and you can download it from iTunes as well.
And so good to have you back with us on Forum. Appreciate your being with us.
Always fun to talk books with you.
And we will return and take more of your calls. We're also going to talk with a buyer for Copperfield's Books up in Sebastopol and find out what people are buying for Christmas time. And I'll put out a question. Would you give an e-book for a Christmas gift? We'll return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're doing an hour on winter books to read as listeners pick their favorite reads, and we're compiling a list, as we generally do, which will be available to you later in the day. We spoke earlier with Pamela Paul, editor of the New York Times Book Review, and getting a lot of listener responses is generally the case. And by the way, you can add your selection by calling us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. If you have a book you'd like to recommend, particularly a book that you feel is a must-read or a should-read or a Why not read? Because you read and would like others to read. You can also email us, forum at kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Some suggestions on Facebook. Anne writes, my all-time favorite that I've read more than once is Shogun. I don't remember sleeping or eating the first time I read it, a total binge read. I can quite happily read anything David Baldacci has written. When it comes to more learned works, Taylor Caldwell is one of my favorites. Emily says on Facebook, The Girl with All the Gifts by M.R. Carey. For those who like a science fiction, post-apocalyptic, terrifying type of read, it's amazing. And some more of your emails. Susie writes, a book that had a huge impact on me was John Krakauer's Missoula, Rape and the Justice System in a College Town. I'm a mother of sons as well as a teacher, and I think that anyone who works with young people, raising children or young adults themselves, should read this book. It's a difficult and engrossing read, but necessary for us to confront the issue of how our country views sexual assault and how the justice system addresses these issues. Andrew says, in nonfiction, a few months ago, I finished a fantastic history by Christopher Clark called The Sleepwalkers. This sounds like the title of a fictional work, but it's a history of World War I. He writes fantastically well, looping together many disparate players in a way that makes sense. Finally, a World War I historian who gives enough attention to the Balkans and Serbia. In fiction, the master of all masters is still Naguib Mahfouz, whose book Palace Walk, one of what's called the Cairo Trilogy, remains the best fiction I've ever read. His characters still have life in my memory years after I first read him, and the plot is both unpredictable and nevertheless completely plausible. It can't be done any better. Here's a tweet. Karen says, Flings by Justin Taylor, a collection of short stories. Tom says, The Millennium Series by Stieg Larsson, a must read. And another Facebook selection from Shirley, A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. It was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. It follows the lives of four friends from graduation from college to middle age. It runs the compendium of life's joys, accomplishments, failures, loves, and heartbreak. I couldn't put the 700-plus page book down. And let's go to your calls. Let's go next to John in San Jose. You're on.
I would recommend Lawrence in Arabia, a recent book. I can't recall the author's name, but a great read about World War One and all the players, the British, the Americans, Germans, French, the Turks, the formation of the Jewish state or the early beginnings of it, and, you know, the Palestine area. It's a really good read considering all the things that are going on today.
And a good movie with Peter O'Toole as Lawrence.
Lawrence of Arabia, yeah. So this is Lawrence in Arabia.
Oh, this is Lawrence in Arabia. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a more recent.
The author is Scott Anderson of that book. We just noted, yeah?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for that, John. Good to hear from you, and I appreciate your call. And we'll get as many of you on here as we can. I want to go next to Mountain View and welcome David. David, you're on.
Good morning, Michael.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to recommend two books. The first is a graphic novel by a San Francisco author named Daniel Berwin. It's called CIA, Operation Ajax. It was first published as the first interactive graphic novel for the iPad a couple of years ago.
Hmm.
And it just came out in hard copy. And what it is, it's a 210-page illustrated graphic novel that describes the overthrow of the Mossadegh government in 1953 in a coup that was engineered by the U.S. and the Brits and put the Shah in power. And it explains how, the lead up to that, the oil history and of the British in the Middle East and how it all came about. And I think it's a must read for people who want to understand how we ruined our relationships with Iran in 1953 by putting a dictator in power. And I think that's a painful story. Painful story, but I think Americans need to understand it to kind of understand more of our relationships with Iran and the difficulties we've had. The second is a book called The City of Rivals by Jason Grumman, who is the founder of the Bipartisan Policy Center in Washington, and it's a study of why our politics no longer work in Washington. And he basically explodes a lot of the myths that are popular about why it's not working, and I think really gets down to the key issues of why our congressmen aren't collaborating with each other to reach compromises that move the country ahead, and some good suggestions about maybe how to fix the system.
Well, thank you for those two, David. Thank you. Appreciate hearing from you, and we'll hear from some others in just a moment. I want to mention, by the way, Pamela Paul said something about this as well, how graphic novels have become really sort of centerpiece in a lot of publishing and a lot that's out there, not only graphic novels, but graphic stories of one sort or another. When I was a kid, some of you can remember classic comic books. You know, they were a little bit like what we see now in graphic novels. Let me get some more of your calls on. We're going to go up to Santa Rosa. And Helen, you're on.
Hi, I want to recommend Circling the Sun. It's the story of Beryl Markham.
Oh, yeah.
And she's known for being a pilot, but it's a much more in-depth story about her growing up in Africa and her relationship with her parents, and also that she was involved with racehorses. Very well written and very interesting.
You remember the author, by any chance, Helen?
Paula McCain.
Ah, okay. So it's really all about Beryl Markham, though, huh?
Yes, it is. It's her life story. It is a fiction, but it's told very well and has a lot of factual information.
Well, thank you, Helen. I appreciate that. And we're getting, of course, a lot of emails and web postings, as we generally do when we get listener pick hour. Here's Bill, who writes, I recently finished reading A Wolf Called Romeo, nonfiction about a charismatic and somewhat friendly solitary wolf in Juneau, Alaska, who played with neighbors' dogs. The writer, Nick Jans, wrote about how Romeo met various challenges, such as finding food, avoiding danger, and finding canine companionship. Another listener writes, even though I'm well past the age he is writing for, I love everything written by the fantasy author Tamora Pierce, particularly her Song of the Lioness series about a young woman who wants to become a knight in a male-dominated society. And Arlene says, I love The Secret Court, all about the life of King David, his relationship with Jonathan, his battles, his wives, compelling, richly detailed, very human portrait of a beloved king, faults and all, as in Bathsheba. Let me get to Lisa next. Lisa, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Hi.
I am really a fan of anything written by the author Peter Heller. He's been a contributor to NPR, and he's an outside magazine, Nat Geo kind of writer guy who's now branched into both memoir, but also some great two recent novels, including The Dog Stars, and one I can't wait to read called The Painter. But what I love about him is he's trained as a nonfiction and fiction writer, but also a poet. And he really, in telling his stories, be it about saving, there's one called Whale Rider about saving whales from the Japanese that are continuing to hunt them even in sanctuary areas. He went on a kind of Greenpeace-like boat called the Sea Shepherd and chronicled that whole journey. He did a surf odyssey down through Baja, Mexico. But he's always talking about adventure tied to sort of a poetic celebration of how important it is that we deal on climate change and cut pollution and the state of the oceans. But it's not preachy. It just moves you. And so I love this guy, and I hope other people pick him up. He's from Denver.
What an enthusiastic review. Lisa, thank you for that.
You bet. Thank you.
Good to hear from you this morning. And I'm going to go to more of your calls and emails. First, I wanted to go to Cheryl Kotler, who is a buyer for Copperfield's Books. They have seven stores in Sonoma, Napa, and Marin, and she works at the headquarters in Sebastopol. And Cheryl, good to have you with us on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael.
So what are people gravitating toward in your bookstore?
Well, what we are talking about here among all of our staff and our customers is our new holiday picks. And I had a couple that I would love to tell you and the listeners about that I think are particularly fabulous. The first one is Ivory Vikings, subtitled The Mystery of the Most Famous Chessmen in the World and the Woman Who Made Them by Nancy Marie Brown. In the 1830s, there was, a discovery of what they now call the Lewis Chessmen on a Hebridean beach in Scotland. These 92 Lewis chessmen to this day reside in the National Museum of Scotland, but they're 12th century carved chessmen. And when you read this book, you get the art and the archaeology and the sagas and the life and the history of the Norsemen. Plus, what's interesting is they attribute the carving of these chessmen to a woman they're calling Margaret the Adroit. Don't you love that name?
Boy, actually, I love the song. I saw those chessmen when I was in Scotland.
Yes, yes. And the other thing that's kind of made them on people's radars is that in the book, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Harry plays a wizard's chess game with these very chessmen. So this is a terrific read, really fun, full of rich information. Then there's another book called The Other Paris by Luke Santi. And we picked this book months ago. It's interesting, though, that it happens to be about the history of the Paris, you could say suburbs or outlier districts from the central Paris. Particularly, it's the Bohemian period. You could compare it to San Francisco's Barbary Coast era and character type. And the artists and the laborers and the pub owners, even Picasso, they're all part of this neighborhood. And this book is full of illustrations and talks about how these folks influenced how Paris itself, in its all of its suburbs, grew up and looks to this day.
Well, speaking of suburbs, this just shows me once again how literate people are in Sebastopol, because these are two picks that you wouldn't necessarily expect from most bookstores throughout the United States. Anything else you want to mention, Cheryl?
Well, I'd love to say that there's a couple of novels. For example, Ron Rash's novel, Above the Waterfall, set in contemporary Appalachia. Besides being one of America's most celebrated and loved authors, I love the poetic language of this book. It really is a story about people who are desperately interested in their connection and their caretake of the land, but also who are beset by things like meth labs and difficult people buying up the land that they've lived and loved and lived on for years, and how to keep connected to each other, how to keep their relationship with the land strong and support each other, given that there's violence that has entered their community. He is a gorgeous writer. I can't recommend him enough.
Well, thank you for those recommendations. Again, Cheryl Kotler is a buyer with Copperfield's Books, and she works at the headquarters in Sebastopol. So good to have you with us on Forum.
Absolutely, anytime.
Thank you, and let me go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Stephen. You're on.
Hi, the name of the book is called Shadow of the Wind. The author is Carlos Ruiz Zafón. He is a Catalan writer.
Can you spell that last name, Stephen?
Zafón, Z-A-F-O-N.
Okay.
It's a story set in Barcelona in the 30s. That is one of the greatest novels I've ever read. And one of the great things about it is they can't make a movie about it. I know that they optioned the book. The writer moved to L.A. from Barcelona, and you know what happens when great literature winds up in L.A. It is an unbelievable book. Every person I've given it to has just fallen in love with it. So I highly recommend it. It will transport you through a love of literature. And it's about a family that owns a bookstore in Barcelona, and it's about young love and it's an incredible book.
Well, thank you. Do you say, I think if you're Catalan, you have to say Barcelona, don't you?
Barcelona.
Yeah, it's the pedant in me. Thank you for that, Stephen. It's a Shadow of the Wind. Visca Boy,
Barça.
Yeah, well, your enthusiasm is infectious, and I appreciate the call. Again, we're putting all these on our website, and they will be available to you. Let me read some more on our website. Listener writes, Lafayette and the Somewhat United States by Sarah Vowell. Daryl writes, I'm engrossed in the story of a new name, the second of the Elena Ferrante Quartet. The last quartet I enjoyed this much included Miles Davis on trumpet. And Meredith tweets, the life-changing magic of tidying up, the Japanese art of decluttering and organizing by Marie Kondo. Also on our website, I haven't read this probably in, I hate to think how long, Emil Zola's Germinal, my favorite book of the year. Very compelling, beautifully crafted, remarkably contemporary in tone. Also, I finally made it through the first volume of The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, and I felt like I was reading a screenplay for Game of Thrones. Endless, fascinating scenes of intrigue and betrayal, and of course, the constant parallels between ancient Rome and modern America. And here's Dominic, who says, one of the best books I've read this past year, and certainly one of the best books I've read, I must add, was Far From the Tree by Andrew Solomon, although I think it came out last year. Let's hear what Dominic has to say about it. He says, as a straight middle-aged male, middle school special ed teacher and GSA ally, I found the depth, compassion, and authenticity of Andrew Solomon's writing captivating while expanding the wonders and heartbreaks and all the stuff that makes each of us uniquely human while incredibly linked. It's a beautifully written book that so often broke my heart and is the better for those breaks. Got some really good reviewers here, don't we? I mean, the prose shines. Alex, I just read Solaris by the Polish author Stanislaus Lem. Solaris is great. It's a science fiction work with a lot of psychology and philosophy mixed in. Amazing. Despite two film adaptations, it was only translated directly into English and released in ebook form last year. It was published in 1961, and previously the only English translation was translated from a French translation. And here's Cecily, who says, Patrick Rothfuss, Name of the Wind and The Wise Man's Fear, great writing. When is the third book coming out? Let me go to more of your calls. Let's go to Oakland and Leela. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I would like to recommend Voyage of the Sable Venus. And the author is Robin Costa-Lewis. She just won the National Book Award. And it's a book of poetry, but it will defy your expectations of what poetry is and has been. I think it's a really exciting book for anybody who loves language, who's thinking about how race is appropriated and reappropriated through art and literature, and she is, you can eat her prose, and you have to eat it like drop by drop, because it's sort of like it just unleashes this depth charge inside you and reconstitutes your DNA. And she's just blowing apart the what we think of as poetry. And she takes, one of the things she does is she catalogs all portrayals, like from ancient times to modern times, and of how Black women have been portrayed in society and art. And what she's done is she takes, in this one part of the book, she takes the titles and the descriptions, and she makes them into poetry. And all she does is punctuation, but it's mind-blowing. And she's from Compton. She brings together like modern yoga and Sanskrit studies and just an incredible edible.
I have to ask, when you talk about how you like to eat the prose and going into your DNA and everything, are you a poet?
Yeah. And full disclosure, I used to write with her years ago when we were both 20-year-olds in Northampton, Mass. And it's just an incredible thing to see her after 20 years. And she has an incredible biography. And you should actually have her on your show. She's fabulous. If you go to nationalbookaward.org, her acceptance speech is beautiful, and she ends with a very timely poem by Pablo Neruda, which the original is Acallarse, and it just talks about, you know, just let's be silent. So it's like meditating, but through the word. And
will you tell her not to be shy and to write to me or have her publisher send?
Oh, she's not shy.
Tell her to have her publisher send me the book. Could you do that?
I will.
Yeah,
I will do that. Yes.
And thank you so much for the call, Lilo. Good to hear from you this morning. We're going to hear from another caller in Oakland. Barack, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
Hi. Okay.
I am calling to recommend a old book that, as an atheist, is a very strange recommendation for me to make, because it is a book that is about faith. It's called Mr. God, This is Anna. The author is only listed as Finn, F-Y-N-N. It's a book I read as a kid and have since then not just read many times, but bought many copies of to give to others. And to me, it's always been a book about human spirit and kindness and generosity and love. It's a story that starts with this gruff guy who practically adopts a little 5-year-old girl on the docks somewhere. And she teaches him through the book about all of these incredible qualities of the human spirit. The way he sees her and the way she evolves in his eyes has always touched me incredibly deeply. It's probably a book that has affected me more than any other in my life in terms of how I like to treat other people in my life, too.
Good recommendation. It's too bad we can't have, and thank you for that, Barack, it's too bad we can't have these recommendations put onto our website, transcribed and put on our website, as well as the books themselves, because we're getting some very thoughtful and compelling reviews here, and quite enthusiastic, many of them. Here's Aaron, who writes about a book that we featured on Forum, Trained by Tom Zellner. It's a great combination of travelogue and railway history around the globe. Makes you want to take a long trip overland, indeed. Allison writes, I loved Annie Barrow's new book, The Truth According to Us. The main character, Jodi, is so beautifully developed that now, a few months after finishing the story, I still think of her. Listener tweets, ebooks as, I put this question out, would you send an ebook as a present? And this listener tweets, ebooks as presents depends on the book. Binge reads are good ebooks, but some books were made to be held. John writes on Facebook, Notes from the Playground, amazing book of 100 stories about elementary school children penned by a San Francisco elementary school principal, Greg John. And another Facebook recommendation from Nora, I love Crooked Heart by Lissa Evans, London during the Blitz, an orphan and a grifter of sorts meet and become unlikely allies. And Bella says, I normally stick to nonfiction, but really enjoyed Ishiguro's Buried Giant. Plowed right through that. H for Hawk, exquisitely written. Next up on my list, Sally Mann's Hold Still and Elizabeth Alexander's The Light of the World. And Pamela Paul, when we had her on, also mentioned H is for Hawk, a book that we had on, the author we had on Forum talking about that book. And another tweet, a couple books from Carl, who tweeted, Two big books for long winters, Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson, and for history lovers, Neptune's Inferno by James D. Hornfisher. I must say that almost every time we do these book selections, somebody mentions something by Neal Stephenson, and that's another writer I have to read that I haven't read. I'm embarrassed about this. Gaiman and now Stephenson. Michelle tweets, in the country, short stories by Filipino-American author Mia Alvar, multiple perspectives on immigration and an expat life. More of your calls. We go to San Leandro. Danielle, welcome.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I wanted to recommend two books, actually, by someone who was a local author, Michael Scott Moore. He had been the theater critic for the SF Weekly and moved to Berlin. But prior to that, he'd actually written a fiction novel, Too Much of Nothing. And then the second book I wanted to recommend from him is more of a surf travel history called Sweetness and Blood. He moved to Berlin and started working for Der Spiegel Online, and actually in researching Sweetness and Blood had ended up in Somalia, looking at surf culture throughout Africa. He returned to Somalia in 2012, and right before he left, his security detail turned on him, and he was held captive for 977 days.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading about that, yeah. But the books are really worth reading, obviously, for you.
Yeah, they're really wonderful. His first book, Too Much of Nothing, is it's a fiction that's set in Southern California during the Reagan era, 1980s, and follows two teenage boys, Eric and Tom, Eric narrates the story of his last few months on Earth, basically dying at the hands of Tom. So that's the first one. And then the second one, if people are more interested in nonfiction, Sweetness and Blood is really a fantastic book. If there are any surfers on a guest list, on a gift list, Mike kind of takes you from the King of Morocco, who institutes a surf school to combat Islamic radicals, to punk rockers in Munich who are surfing the river.
Danielle, I kind of thanks to you for those two picks. We'll put them on our list, and I appreciate hearing from you. I want to get as many of you in here with time permitting as we can. Let me get Brenda next. Brenda, welcome. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you. I'd like to recommend 50 Years of Assimilation and All the Blackness and Whiteness in Between. The author is Wanda Lee Stevens, and it's a story that's beautifully told with humor, and it's about her experience growing up in Detroit and coming out to California, going to college here and all her jobs here and her relationships and friendships and just assimilating here.
So it's a memoir, basically. Huh?
Yes, yeah. And it's written in the form of letters to Martin Luther King. Wonderful book. Oh, my gosh, so relatable and, again, told with such humor.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Brenda, and thank you for that recommendation. Again, all these recommendations will go onto our website and will be available, we hope, by the end of today. And again, as I said, I'd like to get as many of you on as I can. Let me go next to Richard. Richard, you're on.
Yes, thank you very much. I'd like to recommend the novels of the American writer William Gaddis, one of the greatest novelists of the American 20th century, not that well known. His book, J.R., is told almost entirely in dialogue, and his work was underappreciated in its time, but I think it's come to become recognized as being incredibly important work. His first book, The Recognitions, is the 60th year anniversary this year of that. He had his letters published, I believe, in 2013, and I believe that there's a growing interest in this important figure.
Yeah, Gaddis is an important figure. He's certainly gone up in the world of the Literary Stock Exchange, and thank you for bringing him to the attention of our listeners, Richard. I'm going to bring your attention to a couple of emails here. Michelle writes, what about all the great new picture books like Big Bear, Little Chair by Lizzie Boyd? Absolutely beautiful. And The Princess and the Pony by Kate Beaton. Very funny picture book about a girl who wants to be a warrior and needs a horse. Heather emails this. Every year I send my U.S. friends living in Japan a box of books. Some I have read and some I think sound interesting. This has been a tradition for almost a decade. This is the current list this year. I try to mix it up. They are academics working at the Hiroshima Peace Institute. I need one more and then I top it off with a box of chocolate. And these are the books she's sending to Japan. Children of Monsters by Jay Nordinger. Boundaries of Desire by Eric Berkowitz, Circling the Sun by Paula McCain, and Dark Matter and the Dinosaurs by Lisa Randall, which was just recently featured on the Forum program. Here's Riley from Napa. Riley, join us.
Hi. I have a nonfiction to recommend that I'm actually reading in English class right now. It's called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks by Rebecca Skloot.
Yeah, I've heard very good things about that book.
It's phenomenal, and the conversations that it's been sparking in my class are really amazing. It's just such a beautiful expose on the sort of injustices that Black people have experienced over the years and are still experiencing, along with, you know, it may apply to the people who enjoy, you know, history and criminal justice, but also for people who are interested in biology, because it really, really gets into the science of Henrietta's cells that has brought us so far.
It's a book about genetics, and I mean, one big dimension of it, isn't it, as you suggest?
Yeah, well, it's about Henrietta Lacks, who is essentially the creator of the HeLa cells.
Yeah.
We have been using we used it to cure polio, we're still using it to try to figure out how to cure cancer, because they're cancerous cells and they've been alive.
Well, thank you, Riley, and thank all of you for your recommendations this hour. As I said, they'll be up on our website if all goes according to plans, and we appreciate them, and I know they'll be appreciated by many who will look toward this list, as has been the case now for many years. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. And Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our interns are Latoya Tools and Jeremy Siegel. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation.